So if you take go downtown and you take the curve and you bang that left at the end, so you go all the way down and then you go left and it's on the left-hand side about two blocks.
Well, God bless you. It must be. I don't know it. I've never heard of it. I hope it was good.
And on that note, I want to welcome everybody to the world according to the man on my bottom left, Benjamin Jeremy Stein. We salute you, sir. We all salute you. How come that's a thing? But
On your top left, sir.
sorry?
I'm on your top left, sir.
Well, I guess it's all switched. But we're joined tonight by Stephen Gibb from the band Barry Gibb. And obviously the son of Barry Gibb, but also talk show host himself of Addiction Talks with Stephen Gibb. I encourage everybody to download that podcast, listen to that podcast, but of course, listen to
A great super subject.
super subject, but of course, listen to, especially now, it's an important time to listen to podcasts about addiction and mental health.
Absolutely.
Since many people's mental health have been devastated the last over a year. And of course, we're joined by regular Gary Collins from the simplelifenow.com,
Thank you. Thank you.
who's
Golf clap.
handsome and
Golf clap.
debonair as always. Women want to be like him, men want to be with him. But of course, this show would not be
You have that. Okay.
But of course, this show wouldn't be complete without writer, actor, provocateur, saint, sinner, lover, father, grandfather,
Doctor.
husband. Ben, let me get to you that. Okay. But of course, doctor now, Benjamin Jeremy Stein. We salute you, America's teacher. How are you, sir?
God bless you, sir.
How are you?
I'm fine. I'm at my house in the desert, and it's very nice here tonight.
And by the way, I want to thank Gary for bringing Stephen on board tonight. Thank you, Gary. You're a
You're
good friend
welcome.
and a good friend of the
Steve's an
show.
okay guy. You'll learn.
So I
He's
want
all
to tell
right.
you something very interesting. It's not very it's interesting for scary reasons, but one of the obviously in the we've been discussing this on the show, the rise of anti-Semitism, the rise of anti-Americanism going on in this country. And Ben and I live in a state where you could have the greatest arsenal in the world, but you
Greatest
can't
letter,
get
greatest.
the arsenal in the world, but you can't take that arsenal and defend yourself outside of your house.
Didn't know that.
And
I did not know that.
well,
I think you're right. As you say it, I think you're totally right. I think you're both.
you can't get a concealed permit. So yesterday morning, I hate that this is happening, Stephen, Gary, and Ben, that my mother is calling me and telling me that there's going to be a march in their neighborhood by people supporting Hamas and all that jazz. And we were talking about self-defense, and I was looking online on a lark. I said, maybe you could order some pepper spray. And she said, I don't think you could order pepper spray. So I go to Amazon, and sure enough, you could order pepper spray. And then I look and I see you could order a stun gun. And I'm like, okay, let's put that in the cart. And then I say, what about a taser gun? And I swear to you could find a taser gun on Amazon.com, which Ben has all three at his house right now. And this is a man that has a lot of legal weaponry. But and it's frightening times. I feel terrible that my mother has to call me up and is petrified for herself and me. And I want to really talk about self-defense with Gary, with Stephen, with Ben. But I want to get to you, Ben, quickly and explain to people, because you put out a great video the other night of explaining this what Hamas is. And in a couple of minutes, I just want you to explain what Hamas is and what BS they're claiming.
Hamas is a terrorist organization that exists to terrify the Israelis and Jews generally, and they do that by murdering the innocent. The more weak and helpless, the better. They give cash prizes and name streets and boulevards and statues and plazas and parks after people have murdered Jewish children and families. They are themselves the recipients of enormous amount of aid from the United Nations and other fools. And they steal most of that. And some of the leaders of Hamas have gotten to be very, very rich. They are much like organized crime families, only far worse in the sense that they have far more devastating weapons, they are the tools of the Iranians, who are probably at this point the lowest dogs on the face of the earth. Although dogs are my favorite species, so I shouldn't say call them dogs. They are capable and are right now murdering their own people as fast as they can, murdering anyone who possibly could compete with them. They are criminals, thugs, mass murderers, horrible hate crime people, horrible racists. They're probably the worst racist group in the world right now. They are after anyone who is Jewish or has any kind of Jewish blood. And they could not be much worse people. If they had SS uniforms and SS armbands, they would wear them. In fact, some of their friends, the Houthis, I hope that's how it's pronounced, in the southern part of the Arabian Peninsula, do march with SS uniforms and goose step. So these are very, very bad people. It's horrifying, shocking, unbelievable that young people in America are marching, demonstrating in their favor. That's who Hamas is, just the scum of the earth, but very heavily armed by the Iranians, previously by the Russians, but I think the Russians have stopped doing that, and greatly supported by the United Nations, who are really just, they're just disgrace to humanity.
And it's important to note, Stephen, that 64% of the Democrat Party supported Hamas in this last round. That's a outstanding number.
May I ask you, my dear friend, is this from Breitbart? Where did you get this number?
It's Pew. It's a state of polling. But Stephen, you come from Miami Beach, which is a very Jewish neighborhood, and I'm sure the Jews on the ground there are terrified right now.
Well, yeah. I admittedly, I don't get out much. You see this cave in here? Safe. You know, the guns are over there, the guitars are over there.
That's great.
But most of what I see on social media, and I have a lot of Jewish friends, and, I'm fearful of what's going on over there. I'm fearful about what's going on over here. Not fearful as in I fear for my own life, but I'm more concerned about, you know, how kids are being brainwashed these days, how kids are being, given
brainwashed is the exact word. Yeah.
Yeah. An incredible amount of false information. And, you know, social media, I think, is doing a fantastic job of just ruining the American psyche. And
children, especially my dear friend and colleague, Stephen, one of my closest friends is a very tall, extremely, extremely, extremely tall woman. I was a 10 or 11 year old daughter. I forget how old she is. Who goes to a public school, I think fifth or sixth grade, I'm not sure which, and they are propagandizing them that the Jews are the enemies of peace and freedom and decency, when in fact, the state of Israel is the most free democratic state east of the United States of America. Everyone in Israel, Arabs, anyone has Jews, everybody has constitutional rights, has the right to a free and fair and speedy trial, has the right to counsel. Their religious freedom is guaranteed to anyone of any religion. And yet somehow Israel is painted as the villain here, whereas, of course, in the Arab countries, there is no freedom, and there is no freedom of religion especially. So somehow the people who are the villains have been portrayed as the freedom-loving people, and the people who are freedom-loving and law-abiding are portrayed as the villains.
Welcome to America with a K. Welcome to the New World Order. That is frighteningly what Stephen was talking about, what the power of social media is, Gary. And I want to get to Stephen because I actually have a question for him, since he comes from an extreme British band, Rock Family. And I do have a question, but I'll get to Gary first.
Gary. Wait, British or I thought, are they British or Australian?
Originally British.
British, okay.
Australian. They started, they were born in Britain, moved to Australia, came back to Britain, and that's when everything kind of really took off for them. So, yeah.
Oh, okay. Question for me. I want to make sure I can't remember my 70s you know, music history.
Rush is easy. It's Canada, Canada, Canada. But
yeah, as Ben just said, took off in a big way.
Very, very big way.
But Gary, go ahead.
What was the question? I'm sorry. I'm thinking of staying alive right now.
I want to get your thoughts, Gary, because you talk about being off the grid, you're a survivalist, how important it is to teach people self-defense. And I think it's extremely important that they learn how to defend themselves, because there aren't enough police. The mafia has been decimated, I hate to say, in major metropolitan areas. And people are alone.
Well, and if there are two equalizers in life, and I talk about this a lot, it's, you know, to equal the playing field of anything, right? Any caste system or whatever system is education and being able to protect yourself. That's the evener, because no one's going to mess with you if they don't know if they're going to get their ass kicked or not. You know what I mean? As a not a very big guy, I don't know why, but I used to go to a lot of rough bars, I guess, when I was younger, hunting, you know, those women things. Well, and like, I don't know what it was, but the biggest guy would always come up to me and try and start a fight. And once they realized I wasn't going to back down and that he was at least going to be in for at least, he's going to have to break a sweat at the very least, they would back down. And that's the thing about being able to protect yourself and being able to show that, hey, I'm not going to take your crap. You know, if you get in my face, I'm going to punch you in the nose, you know, back off. And I think that's very important. Not only that, but it builds a form of kind of confidence. You walk differently. You act differently. You look people in the eye differently. It's a whole different mindset when you can know that you can take care of yourself and at least defend yourself. If you go out there like a sheep, trust me, predators can smell it. I've been around it. I've watched evil people prey on other weak people. They know right away. They can smell them out in a heartbeat, but they know the person who's been around the block a few times and they'll usually avoid them.
That happened to Ben the other day. Ben was driving, and the reason I sent him those things was because his car was assaulted in a sense, and he was left there defenseless, and they picked on somebody they thought they could pick on. And you're sitting there in your car in Los Angeles, and because of the heightened thing, you're wondering whether it's BLM, you're wondering whether it's a Palestinian, pro-Palestinian group.
It wasn't BLM. I would say that people look Palestinian, but I could be totally, completely wrong about that. They were certainly dark, complexed, and Middle Eastern looking. They came up next to me in my unbelievably criminally beautiful car and said, and asked me to roll down the window, which I did, because usually when they do that, they want to say Bueller or something like that. And I rolled down my window and they said, you damaged our car. You just crashed into our car. I said, no, I didn't. And they said, yes, you did. You have to pull over and look at it. I said, no, I didn't. And then I remembered, click, click, click. I'd read that this is how carjackings start. And so I pulled away from them, and then they came up to me at the next stoplight, and they rolled down the window, and I thought, I'm so naive. I thought, well, this time they'll apologize for that. And they said, you look like the kind of man who would like little boys. And we have something in the back of the car that you could touch. So at that point, I just rolled up the window and drove away. And I was, by a great stroke of luck, only a couple blocks from Beverly Hills Police Department. But it was a scary moment. And I tell you, the very next day, the thing I did the very next day was apply for a concealed carry weapons permit. And I have a hell of a lot of guns, but I wanted to get one small enough to carry in my pocket.
So here's my question. And so Stephen has an arsenal, as he said, guitars and guns, great name for a band. Gary's, I'm sure, locked and loaded. Ben's locked and loaded. But when you bring this up to people, people are still scared to, when I brought up to family members that they should get these things like taser guns, and they're very...
Guns.
Sorry?
Or just guns.
But again, you can't conceive. You could walk around with a taser gun. It's legal. But...
It's just good to have a gun in a drawer next to your bed.
What do you think, Stephen? Why are people so reticent to, and Gary and Ben, to defend themselves?
I would have to say, I think a lot of it is due to the mass shootings and the kind of, you know, shall I say, panic porn that goes on the, you know, the nightly news, you know, particularly, you know,
good point. I get what you're saying.
I just think that that firearms and the responsible use of them has been forgotten, that, you know, that, you know, out of all of the firearms in circulation legally, you know, I'm sure it's a pretty high number at this point. I don't know the exact number, but, you know, most people that own firearms know how to safely handle their firearms.
Well, in California, you have to take a test to buy a firearm, and it's not a particularly complicated test. It's not like the physics SAT, whatever.
And you get bullets, as far as I know, from the friends I've talked to in the state of California, finding ammunition is pretty difficult.
Well, it is right now, Steve. It's difficult in the sense that if you go into a gun store, they'll tell you we're back ordered. You have to come back in a week. It's no more difficult than that.
But he actually raised I'm very impressed, because with the answer you said was the number one answer that everybody, Gary Collins, said to me when I said this, that they don't want to end up in jail. And I said, better in jail than dead.
Well, they're doing a good job of, you know, making it sound like you're an evil person if you carry a firearm and you're going to go out and, you know, all you do is stomp baby heads and shoot puppies and old ladies. But for me, I've been mountain biking. This is in California for most of it, but all over the country, but mainly in California is where I noticed it. I always have a knife with me, always. And it's always visible. Usually it's on my Camelback. I have one there, and I'll even have one in my pocket. And they may not know it or not, but I usually have a gun on me too. The looks I have gotten over the last 10 years, especially the last 5 years, having just a folding knife, 3.5-inch knife on my Camelback front strap, you would think that I am out literally pulling heads off children. Some of the looks I've gotten from people it's ridiculous. It's a friggin' knife. I started carrying a knife when I was 6. You know, I got a Barlow knife when I was 6 years old from my dad. And I think my grandpa gave me one when I was 7. It's like, and we carried them to school. For God's sakes, all the kids had pocket knives when I was in grammar school.
Even I, who went to school in a pretty prosperous area, but not wildly prosperous, the kids carried knives. And I will tell you, since Gary, you and I were just talking about wonderful, wonderful North Idaho. In North Idaho, you can carry a gun with you on your person, or you can leave it on the seat of your car. And people are so respectful and so law-abiding that at some restaurants, I have seen people pull into the restaurant and just leave their gun on the seat of their truck and don't even lock the truck. And that's that's unimaginable in New York or Los Angeles, but because everyone knows that people are not going to put up with being screwed around with in North Idaho, you can do it.
And on that note, if you just tuned in, you are listening to The World According to That Man, Benjamin Jeremy Stein. I want to remind everybody to download our podcast. It's been exceptional, and thank you for the great 5-star rating. Don't forget to give that 5-star rating. Of course, you can find Ben on Parler at Ben Stein. We'll be more active on it now that it's sort of working. And of course, his email, bensigns.substack.com. And we're joined tonight by Stephen Gibb from Barry Gibb of the Bee Gees. And of course, he also hosts a show, Addiction Talks with Stephen Gibb. Download that show. I can promise you it's going to be really good. And of course, Gary Collins from thesimplelifenow.com, one of my favorite shows, if not my second favorite show to this show. And of course, Benjamin Jeremy Stein. But I want to ask Ben, if it's okay, I want to ask Stephen a question, because I think it's really important, because you come from that rock scene of Britain, where your father and uncles were. And there is a huge movement of anti-Semitism in that rock scene. I grew up loving Pink Floyd. I can't listen to them anymore. They're for the boycott, divest, and sanctioning of Israel. Elvis Costello is part of it, and quite a few other famous British bands. Have they put pressure on your family not to play in Israel? Or, I mean, what is it about that?
No, I mean, we were asked actually not too long ago to play there, and it was just prior to COVID, and things just didn't work out. But it was going to be a first for us, and we were really looking forward to it. I mean, I've always wanted to go. I've only heard, you know, incredible things about Israel. You know, my wife is half Jewish, and, you know, my kids are, you know, quarter, you know, whatever they are. But, you know, the thing is that, you know, I'd love to go. The thing is, in the UK, and this is just me personally, I'm a musician and an artist first and foremost, and I keep my politics or anybody else's that's a musician, I keep that separate. You know, I don't really write songs that are political personally. It's just not my thing. I don't have anything against it. I'm a huge Pink Floyd fan, whether I agree with their politics or not. I'm going to listen to the music because I'm a huge David Gilmour fan. I think
Roger Gilmour too. That's my only way out.
I think Roger Waters, you know, he said some very controversial things that, you know, I really don't know where that comes from. But as far as anybody else in the rock scene, I mean, I haven't heard anything, you know, anti-Semitic personally.
Well, anti-Zionism, right? Ben Stein. All the encouragement from those bands not to put from Roger Waters to, I want to say Brian Eno, but I could be mistaken. And definitely Elvis Costello.
Waters outspoken, but I don't think people pay that much attention to him, in all honesty. I really don't. I think that especially bands prior to, you know, lockdown. Listen, if you go to Israel, as I understand, the money's very good. And any band that I know is going to go because A, they've heard great things about it. And B, as I understand, the money is very good there. So
it's always had an awful lot of anti-Semites. It's always been sort of fashion among the upper class, especially aristocratic English people, to be anti-Semitic. Even in almost any book you read about the English upper class, anti-Semitic commentary and comments are standard. This is true even of Agatha Christie and her mystery stories, but everything else. And the English aristocracy is sort of known to sneer at Jews. And in England, I'm sorry to say, because England is a great, great, great country, and my wife and I pray for England every night, for Great Britain, the United Kingdom, as we call it. They stood up to the Nazis. They're incredibly heroic, wonderful people, incredibly, incredibly brave people. SAS, probably the best infantry in the world. They're an amazing people, but unfortunately there is a very strong current of anti-Semitism in the United Kingdom. That's been true forever. I don't think it's unusual. There's a very strong current of anti-Semitism in France as well. It's just not an unusual thing. It's my wife, a genuine saint, a living, breathing saint, as smart a person as there is on this planet, not at all Jewish, Scottish, German, French, and English, says she thinks it's in the DNA of people.
And by the way, just so you know, there are people like Lords Stephen, who's very big, who's chosen not to, who caved in to the pressure from those groups like the BDS and Roger Waters, and that have caved, especially the younger generation. But the older generation, like Stevie Van Zandt, said, go fuck yourself. You know, and Bon Jovi obviously played there. But Gary, I go to you because we discussed this with where how music has become so politicized that one of our favorite bands has been, they mistook prog rock for progressive rock and for being progressives in the band Rush. And I love Gary's anger towards the left that he feels like Rush has been taken over by the left because they think progressive means prog means progressive.
Yeah. The progressives in their genre great. And it's like, no, it's not collectivism rock. It's prog rock. It's different. And in the fact that, you know, they basically forced Rush, though, to change their stance on far as their support of Ayn Rand a long time ago. And, you know, like I said, I'm a big Rush fan. I read all the lyrics. Trust me, Neil Peart was still a big Ayn Rand fan till the day, till the very end. It's all in the lyrics. Anyone who pays attention, you'll see it there. And, you know, I think they had to even tone it down because they were not a political band. They aren't. And I think they were catching so much heat just because of the Ayn Rand influence. You know, and I love the progressives because most of them have never read one word by Ayn Rand, ever, ever. They have no clue what it's even about.
Ben, I want to get back to you, by the way. Are you going to be less hesitant now to open your window to people? Are you going to be less hesitant to, I mean,
I'm more hesitant. I'm not opening my window to anyone. By the way, I usually have a caregiver who's with me because I hurt my knee quite badly a couple of years ago in a fall in LAX. And I usually have a caregiver to help me because my walking is a bit slow. But particular moment, the caregiver was helping my wife, who has hurt her foot quite badly. And her caregiver doesn't drive, although she's a wonderful, wonderful woman, but she doesn't drive. So my caregiver was driving my wife and her caregiver, so I was by myself, which I rarely am in my car. But no, I'm not going to roll down my window to anyone. No, I'm not going to. And I think a part of it had to do with the fact, and I hesitate to say this because it sounds like I'm bragging, but I'm not. I'm rapidly going broke, but I have an incredibly wonderful car. No one on earth deserves as wonderful a car as I have. And I think that might have had something to do with it too.
Yeah.
But it is a little scary now that, you know, because Stephen, like when Ben walks around on the street, no matter what party people are from, and I often share this story where we were in West Hollywood and we were on top of the roof of the Pavilion's parking lot. And this is years ago. A couple transgender people had walked up to him, and I mean real transgender people, they like full on, done the change, run up to Ben and go, could we please have your autograph? Could we please take a picture with you on top of the roof? And Ben's like, of course. And, you know, Ben, no matter what his party, Ben is loved by the masses because of all the different work you've done. And, mm-hmm. But it's sort of sad that that's where we are now, that somebody like Ben Stein, who is so giving as far as like, and Stephen and I were sharing that. I was sharing with him about that Billy Gibbons story of you on the plane. And Billy Gibbons is another person that's extremely giving of his time and his autographs and is always very nice. But where people now are going to be more hesitant to do this type of stuff out of fear.
I will say that my main contact with other people besides when I'm shopping, because my wife likes to eat wonderful food and she doesn't like to shop. And so your humble servant, an old man like me, who does all the shopping and cooking. At the grocery store, I really have no problem. I am a little scared at the airport. I don't have my own plane. I've never even come close to having enough money to have my own plane. I am a little scared at the airport these days, a little scared.
I hate that, Stephen. I hate that this older generation of especially Jews, and you know, your wife's family being half Jewish, obviously there's an older generation of Jews there, has to be scared. And this constant theme, Stephen, where people are saying, well, if you're Black in America, you have to be scared. Nobody is bringing up, if you're half Jewish, if you're fully Jewish in America, you have to be scared, that you have to teach your kids. Because half Jewish for Hitler was Jewish enough, Stephen.
You bet.
Well, I mean, I hope this isn't an unpopular opinion, but I really, you know, and I'm not big into like fear. But I will say that it's almost at a point now where it doesn't matter who you are. You got to look over your shoulder.
I'm afraid Stephen is totally right. You're completely right.
And I have to say that, you know, you'd have to look over your shoulder in three-dimensional reality and virtually, because, you know, what I'm seeing right now is, you know, the harassment, whether it be through social media or people getting canceled or banned or whatever's going on. Like the thing, I wake up every day and I feel like I'm in one of these, like, you know, communist movies from the 80s, you know, where you're, yeah. you're like, wait a second, what happened to America?
Yeah, well, it's like, it's all become like 1984. I mean, George Orwell saw it all coming, and now it's come. And in America, the Constitution, which is the greatest document ever written by man, has been undermined by calling it and the people who wrote it racist. And now there's nothing worse you can call a person than racist. Well, I can think of something worse. You can call them killers. You can call them mass murderers. You can call them racist murderers. And that is, unfortunately, the kind of direction that the Democrat Party is heading in, and the direction that many of the people marching for Hamas are marching. Hamas's goal is not to take certain counties from Israel. It's to kill all the Jews. That's their goal. They want a second Holocaust. They want to rape the women, kill the children, old people, and women and men. They want mass murder. They want a second Holocaust. Iran's goal is a second Holocaust. I don't see how we're going to stop them unless Israel uses nuclear weapons against their atomic facilities. There's just no stopping point between now and the second Holocaust by the destruction of Israel by the Iranians. And that's a very horrible situation. And Mr. Trump, I think, was taking steps to make sure we didn't get to that horrible stopping point, but Mr. Biden is definitely not.
You know, you raise a great point, but if you just tuned in, you are listening to The World According to That Man, Benjamin Jeremy Stein. I want to thank everybody in the YouTube chat. People here for the first time because of Steven. They love you, Ben. They keep on doing Bueller Bueller, and they love with Ben Stein's money and everything else. Of course, they love Gary and Steven, not me. I mean, but you can find our podcast, The World According to Ben Stein.
What I'm told is that the girls in the chat are flirting with you. They're certainly not flirting with me. At least I've never seen a chat, but what I'm told is that the girls are flirting with you, Judah, not with me.
Everybody loves the Judah except women in LA and every major metropolitan city. Remind everybody, download the podcast, BenStein.substack.com. Also, we're joined tonight, of course, by Stephen Gibb from Barry Gibb of the Bee Gees. And of course, Gary Collins from TheSimpleLifeNow.com, who truly, you think women like me, women love Gary. And of course, America's humble servant, Benjamin Jeremy Stein. But I want to get to a bigger question that you raised right now. So take Ben Stein, take the Bee Gees. Would Ben Stein be able to start today what he did 50 years ago, 40 years ago, 30 years ago, 20 years ago? Would you have been able to have been as this prolific? Would John Hughes have been able to make Ferris Bueller's Day Off today? Would Ben Stein have been able to write the columns he's written over the years today, the GQ stuff and all that stuff? Would you have been able to do that given your politics? And I asked the same thing with the Bee Gees, given that music scene and what went on in the music scene and the cancel culture, what attracts people to these things sometimes is, Ben, is the women, is the fun, is the politics, is the fame. Do you think you would have been able to have this career you've had now?
Yes, but bear in mind, my career started in a big way with Richard Nixon, and he was, despite the vile lies of the left, the vilest of scummy, nauseating lies, Nixon was not in any sense an anti-Semite and was the best friend the Jewish people have ever had since the founding of Judaism 6,000 years ago. Second, I went to the Wall Street Journal right after I worked for Nixon, and the Wall Street Journal editorial page is a very philo-Semitic entity. After that, I came to Hollywood, and I have to say, probably that would have been more difficult. But as an actor, I worked with people who were quite philo-Semitic, and John Hughes was not afraid of anybody on the earth. So So I think I would have been able to work for him. I don't think I would have been able to do some of the commercials I've done just because black people get all the commercials nowadays. But I think
no, Ben, the bigger question, though, is would John Hughes have been able to make his movies? Because he's been called misogynistic. He's been called by people in his own cast, Molly Ringwald, for God's sake, you know, who owes her life to John Hughes, has gone, he would have been canceled for some of the movies. And I think it would have been more difficult for Hughes in today's day and age. That was my.
You may well be right, but I mean, John Hughes was a genius at writing and producing and directing movies on a scale that has not been equaled.
Not just brilliant
comedy, and I think he would be able to get through with it. I mean, after all, look, you've got this asshole Borat who makes all kinds of horrifyingly racist comments, and he's quite successful.
Because he's on the left, Stephen. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think the Bee Gees could have? Do you think those bands, those great bands from the 70s, who sort of lived, I don't know about the Bee Gees as much, but like sort of lived that Sodom and Gomorrah type of life?
Oh, well, I wouldn't put the Bee Gees in that category.
Right. No, I know.
But I'll say this. I think good or great is great. And great always makes it. I don't care what day it is. I really believe that. However, I think having a long career is very difficult now. I think that if you are an artist and you are, if you're, let's say you're a 20-year-old artist and you come out right now, the chances of you even being remembered in 5 years are really slim. I mean, almost there's no chance.
The business
is just not interested in longevity in any form whatsoever, because the longer you're around, the more you cost. Okay. That's just simple mathematics. The other thing is that bands, I mean, you're talking about the Sodom and Gomorrah lifestyle. Look, the bottom line is bands
that's
don't
the best part.
Rock bands don't get half of the love that they used to get because of that. Listen, here's the thing. Rappers, young pop artists, and country artists, single solo artists, they're easier to control, and they're easier to market, and they're easier to throw away than a band is. And a band is harder to control. It's five insane people, generally speaking, anywhere from 3 to 5, usually absolute lunatics, and the best kind in some cases. But you know, I think that bands now are just going to be everything is whatever it is for the times, you know what I mean? Bands like The Who and Zeppelin and whatever. Yes, there was a lot of, you know, there was the, you know, at the end of the 60s, there was the Summer of Love, and, you know, everybody was taking acid and, you know, everybody was having sex, and that was great. And Ben was probably one of them. I think I've but that was the thing is, what people forget is that it's historically, it was appropriate at the time. That's what was happening. That was the growth that people were going through. They were discovering themselves, and that, for good, bad, right or wrong, you know, in the 70s, you know, it got a little bit crazier in other ways. In the 80s got even more excessive in other ways, but, you know, kind of cocaine became a thing more so than it kind of ever was. And, you know, drugs and music shape culture usually, or it did, until technology became what drives everything. And now the rock stars are the tech people.
Yeah. And Ben, he raises a great point. One of my favorite stories of yours is when you went to that show and you accidentally smoked something that was laced.
Yeah, that was terrible. My wife, he and I did together. It was late. We thought it was a reefer, and it was PCP. And boy, we really got sick, especially my wife had to go to the hospital. I was feeling terrible, but my wife had to go to the hospital. PCP is really dangerous stuff. Really, really dangerous.
But Ben, don't you sort of like, you came out to Hollywood because of your love of, you like, you know, your love of attraction to the other sex. And that was something, and it's almost being forced into us, Ben. Cars and women. And it's almost like you're not allowed, they're trying to suppress. And I think part of that, with great, you know, with great music, with great movies, sometimes comes success. It's just a fact of life. It's the lifestyle that, and I think we're losing a lot of creativity with what Stephen is talking about with this cancel culture, because who in God's name wants to put themselves out there out of fear, Ben? Who's going to be their true authentic self?
Well, I that's a very good point. It's a very, very good point. I think my true authentic self is so old now that I don't think anyone's in any danger from me, although we'll see. But my true authentic self, certainly when I was young, was a maniac authentic self. Thoroughgoing maniac authentic self. And yeah, I would be terrified to do now to do the things I did when I was younger.
And by the way, if you, Stephen, there's an amazing book. One of the best books you'll ever read, Stephen, is a book that Ben wrote that they made into a movie called The Boost with James Woods and Sean Young. Was a book he wrote called Lose.
About Quaalude addiction, Quaalude and money addiction. And it is all true, although the names have been change and to protect the, well, they weren't innocent.
That'll be my next book. Awesome.
And Gary, what are your thoughts on that?
Sean Young was hot.
Sean Young was unbelievably gorgeous. You remember her in Blade Runner? She's unbelievable. Yep. Absolutely unbelievable.
Great actress.
Oh, I remember, trust me, Phoebe Cates, Sean Young. I remember them all. I may have explored myself and found myself many times during that time. But yeah, it's, I think, like I said before, we've talked about this, about getting rid of creativity and critical thinking, right? So they want to, if you don't have a culture like you, music, growing up, music was incredibly important to all of us. Think of kids today, what they have to listen to and the garbage that comes out. There's no creativity in any of it. There's no one taking any chances. There's no bands going out and touring and grinding themselves into the ground to get a following. They're all trying to do YouTube videos and you know, or like the Dixie Chicks changing their name to the Chicks. You gotta be kidding me. It's ridiculous.
You know, it's so interesting you say that. My son, my wife and I love beyond words. Wonderful, wonderful kid. He does something called Technopop. And if Kim Jong-un could play that to the rest of the world, he would subjugate the world in a matter of minutes. That is the kind of garbage that's coming out of the music world today. My son's a wonderful, wonderful kid, and I believe someday we'll come away from this technopop. But today, you're right. You know, when I think of the technopop and compare it with the songs from the Brothers Gibb, it's not even the same species.
And Ben, you raise a great point though. Sorry, go ahead, Stephen.
I was just going to say, you know what it is though, is that the drugs have gotten harder and harder and more intense. And what happens is, I think with this, with the techno music and stuff like that, it's really only, you're only able to enjoy it absolutely out of your mind. And so the thing is that, you know, the drugs now are way more powerful than even the drugs I was doing and the drugs you were doing, Ben. And so with that,
I'm not sure about that.
It's debatable, I'm sure.
Just because of Quaaludes.
Well, yeah, Quaaludes are, I've never had
one. Way beyond that.
But I do think as the drugs get better and they make you worse, you know, you're so high, you think you sound great, and they're making music that is just
hard.
There's no soul in it. There's no heart to it.
But I think what you guys are
put it, there is, there's no soul in it. You can hear it. You can hear there's no passion in the music.
Gary, it's so right. There's no passion in almost any of American culture or world culture today. You're so right. You are so right.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Head on, Ben.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's not just music where we've lost individuality. It's obviously in the media too. Okay, so Ben Stein, who's been writing for God knows how long, is one of the most individualistic writers you will ever meet. You are. And some people will agree with you, some people won't agree with you, but it comes from the heart. And as much as I didn't like a lot of the stuff Christopher Hitchens wrote, he was an individual. As much as oftentimes I don't like what Glenn Greenwald writes, he's an individual. And we have lost, they have so beaten down people, Ben and Steven and Gary, with their own thoughts, with their own minds. Like, you can't write that. You can't. And eventually you start to think, I can't be creative because either I'll be canceled. They won't allow me, Ben.
Right. Or I won't make a living. And that's a very scary thought. I mean, people who are that come from very wealthy families should do not have to worry about that. But for most people, making a living is an important consideration in life. And for artists to know that if they take one step off the beaten path, if they are the slightest bit politically incorrect, they're not going to earn a living. That is a very serious sanction. I mean, it's interesting. People talk about the blacklist of the late 40s and early 50s against communists or people with communist connections, and how screenwriters could not make any money writing screenplays because they were blacklisted. Well, I guarantee you, conservatives are being blacklisted right now in Hollywood, and the blacklist is really thoroughly complete. And the blacklisted communists or leftists, usually communists in the 50s, they found work, they used pen names, they had friends, give them jobs. The conservatives in Hollywood have no friends.
We have no fronts. It was a brilliant Woody Allen movie called The Front that was dedicated. We have no fronts. We have nobody that we could write a script and hand it to somebody, and somebody has enough guts to bring that out. And Stephen, that's a terrifying thing, especially you're a musician, you're creative. It must be a terrifying thing to speak the truth, to tell your story. Even to say that you have guns is not fashionable if you're a musician.
Yeah, there's probably some truth to that too. But you know, I didn't come to this country. You know, I came to this country an immigrant. I worked hard to become a citizen of this country. I have, you know, I work to get my concealed weapons permit. I take my gun ownership very seriously. And it's one of the rights I enjoy as an American to safely carry a weapon and also protect my family. You know, I mean, I'm sorry, that is an absolute. I'm not going to be caught not being able to protect my family.
Well, there's a reason, there's a reason that there is a Second Amendment. If the Second Amendment wasn't just stuck in there to use up ink and paper. The Second Amendment was put in there because it is very important for people to be able to protect themselves. And in the case of the writers of the Constitution, they felt it was very important for the ordinary citizen and communities to be able to protect themselves from the government. And in this case, I don't think we could protect ourselves from the government because the government has the overwhelming preponderance of force and violence, but we can protect ourselves from brutalitarian thugs marching down the street. I've said this before, as you all know, but I don't think Stephen has heard this. We live in what I think is a very nice part of Beverly Hills. And last summer, when I was speaking somewhere, my wife called me to tell me that there were mobs marching around our house shouting, "Eat the rich," and somebody tried to break in the back door. And my wife and her nurse were in her locked themselves in their bedroom, bathroom, and took out a gun and were hiding there. That's horrifying, but they had a gun.
Wow.
It's frightening stuff. Stephen, I just want to tell you something very interesting. I was living in Israel it really expanded my mind because there they have MTV Europe. And And I'll never forget this. It was VH1 breaking news. The band Take That has broken up, and women were jumping, girls were committing suicide and jumping off buildings. And the reason I bring that up is they cover one of the best Bee Gees songs of all time, which is I Want You Back. And it's just an incredible song. But I remember that was my BG knowledge in those days. But
that you know, Take That is fascinating.
I know that's it's that I'm one of the that most people who have no idea who that Robbie Williams is, one of the biggest, has sold over 160 million albums worldwide, and could walk down the street of America and nobody would know who he was. Yeah. And yes, I am proud of my
Europe is awful. I was in overseas and had to watch MTV Europe, and I'd rather just drive a spike in my eye.
And on that note, if you just tuned in, you are listening to The World According to Ben Stein. I am very proud that I know who Take That is. We're joined tonight by Stephen Gibb from the Barry Gibb band, obviously of the Bee Gees, and of course Gary Collins from TheSimpleLifeNow.com. And Ben Stein. And I think it's really important, Stephen, that people realize like who Ben is and what influence, you know, your family's group did. I think it's really important, and especially in today's day and age, that we realize that there was, Ben Stein thinks sometimes we're allowed special anymore. I don't think we're allowed special moments, and we're not allowed to be, remember the past, and we're not allowed to think of how special people like you were and special bands were, Ben.
Well, I'm compared to the Bee Gees, I'm nothing. I'm just a grain of sand on the beach compared to the Bee Gees. I'm nothing, absolutely nothing. But I will tell you something which terrified me the other day. I was listening, I had a friend visiting me, and I was playing the disc of a wonderful movie called Performance, which I think probably Stephen knows and Judah knows and Gary may know, but Mick Jagger sings a large part, not all, but a large part of the songs in it. And this friend said to me, why are you listening to this music? It sounds like music from a horror movie. And I said, my God, that's Mick Jagger. And she said, what? And I said, yeah. And she said, who's that?
Has come to some crazy things. I want to just backtrack a little bit on Ben, something Ben said
of course
before, is you know, when you were talking about the blacklist stuff, you know, in the communist era, and you know, the thing that's happening now is also with the vaccines, and I don't want to, you know, I'm a little hesitant to go down this road. But
on this show, you could go down any road.
I just want to say that, you know, I think that as an American, if you don't want to get the vaccine, don't get the vaccine. If you want to get the vaccine, get the vaccine. You shouldn't be blacklisted for being not necessarily anti-vax, just kind of hesitant about vaccines at this point, because I don't think, me personally, and maybe I don't know enough, but I don't think there's enough information available yet to convince me to get a vaccine. If I already had COVID and I'm fine. Now, that doesn't mean that's the same for everybody. If you have a pre-existing condition or whatever, you know, I just lost a family member who just got the vaccine. 2 days later, they were gone. So, you know, I don't know what to do about this, but I can see that there's this dividing line now where if you don't get a vaccine, you might as well say, okay, well, you can't work either.
You just brought up something really spectacular, because Ben and I both got viciously ill and suffered serious consequences from the second shot. But you also brought up a word that Ben loves to, it's one of Ben's favorite things to say that we wish more people would say, is I don't know.
Yeah.
And we're in,
I don't know. Yeah. Help me understand. You know, I'm a student. I'm not walking around as a master. I want to know if I don't know. But right. I also, you know, listen, I am fine with taking a vaccine as long as the pharmaceutical companies that make these vaccines, if they kill me, my family's going to be okay. That's all
I'd like to add to Stephen. I want to see the executives of a pharmaceutical company take the vaccine too.
And Ben, he raises, and Gary, there's brilliant points Stephen just brought up, is that we've been so beaten down, Ben, that people can't say, I don't know. That if somehow you say, I don't know, I'm scared, you're an anti-vaxxer. Like that's how much what a job the media and social media has done to people in our country, Ben.
I think the media has more blood on their hands than anybody.
Absolutely. The media, absolutely, Stephen. The media in America and in the Western world today is the, I've said this before, I'll say it again, is the equivalent of Hitler's Sturmabteilung. They are the bully boys, the thugs who go around and beat up anyone who opposes the regime. They are America's SA, and I'm sure they have the same thing in the United Kingdom and in France and in Germany and in Italy and in Spain. They are the people who beat up and beat the life out of and the spirit out of anyone who questions the regime. And they have a lot of blood on their hands in every possible way.
And on that note, I want to get to a little game that I decided to play tonight. It's called Seconds and Inches. It's a term we like to use in the A&A world or in the 12-step world, not AA, 12 steps. I was thinking about a time where Ben Stein almost got on a plane, time that Ben was almost about to get on a plane that, thank God he didn't get on, and it crashed. And it was taken over by a disgruntled employee, and from LA to San Francisco.
I was going up there to talk to a very, very close friend from law school about representing me in the case where Joan Rivers was suing me for libel over something, a humor column I had written about her in GQ. And we ran into very heavy traffic going to LAX, and I missed my flight, and that flight crashed, killing everyone on board.
So it's an insane story, and I want a story from each of you of a second and inches that changed your life, that changed the trajectory of Stephen Gibbs' life.
You want to hear from me first?
Yeah.
There's a lot of them. I've been very lucky. I've had probably nine lives, but I think I'm on the ninth. I had an overdose.
Scary. Very scary.
That's terrifying. I think we might've lost Stephen for a second or.
He's right there. I think he's there. Maybe he's not there.
I think Stephen froze up Gary for a second. But Gary, what was an inciting, when we get Stephen back, what was an inciting incident in your life, Gary, that changed the trajectory of how you think and how you believe?
Wow.
I like putting everybody on the spot.
Yeah, give me some time to think about that one. I don't know. I think for me, life's been a culmination of things like that. I can't think of one particular thing that changed the trajectory of my life that drastically. It was a lot of little increments. But I've had addicts in my family as well. And I won't get into it, but my dad, going to prison for a pretty horrific event, definitely made me think about a lot of things and about being a good person and doing the right thing and how your actions, your selfish actions can negatively impact a lot of people. And that's what I would take from that instance with my dad. It taught me that, your selfishness and your actions have dire consequences on a lot of people besides yourself.
I would like to see yours again, Judah.
I'll be honest. I gotta say, so my inciting incident, I mean, I have had a few, but one of my greatest, people are often curious of how we met. And, it was at that overflow meeting at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center. And I had just moved to town and we helped start that.
The Sundowners meeting.
The Sundowners meeting. And we had just met and And I was sharing and speaking at the meeting, Gary, and afterwards, Ben Stein walked up to me and said, "That's very funny. That's very funny. That's very funny. And where do you go to meetings?" And that we started going to, I said, "I go to the Key Club during the daytime." And we started and going to the Key Club. And there's so many, like Gary said, there's a lot of different experiences. But for me, it was this is a whole other episode, Ben. But I love your story about that 11-step meeting that you used to go to with the Quaaludes, you know, and how that meeting saved your life. And I want you to tell people about that as we're closing out the show.
We used to have a meeting in Malibu at Point Doom. It was the former junior high school in Point Doom, and it had fallen into disuse. It was a community center. We rented a room on Mondays through Saturdays for an 11th step a meeting with had sharing and reading, and it was an incredibly good meeting. I went to that meeting almost every day for 5 years, and it changed my life. But I would say the number one inciting incident in my life was meeting my wife, who is a living, breathing saint, an actual divinity, actually divine, actually superhuman. If there is a God, and I think there is, my wife is a big part of that God.
And but it's very well said, but you've also shared about that experience of welcome back, Stephen Gibb. But you've also shared about that experience where you were so lonely and isolated and you wanted to like push your face against the or you know, that person that helped you get to that 11 step meeting, the person that he lied to you.
It was a friend of mine from a very, very famous Hollywood screenwriting family. And I was telling him that I wanted to find some cute girls. That was a time in my life when finding cute girls was at a premium in my life. Now I have more of them than I know what to do with. But I asked him about if there are a lot of cute girls today. I mean, he said, "Oh yeah, that's the main reason to go." Well, that was not true. There were a lot of cute girls, but that was not the main reason to go.
And welcome back, Stephen Gibb. I'll give you a second because all you said was overdose, and it cut out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah. So I'm sorry, guys. I went out. Anyway, I had an overdose, and I came into contact with some kind of universal consciousness. I saw the white light and the whole thing, and
we've lost them again. And on that, oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I could come back, or I could.
You're back.
Okay.
You're back. We're watching you. We're listening to you. We're back.
Okay. All right. Good. Anyway, I was given a choice, and next thing I know, I woke up and I was alive. And at that point, I knew that that was my last chance at having a life worth living. So here I am.
That's brilliantly said, and I really want to appreciate your honesty. And the reason I wanted to bring this up at the end of the show, like I started the show, there are a lot of people out there that are struggling. There are a lot of people out there that don't know that there's an other way out. This isn't just if you're an addict or you're an alcoholic. You could simply be living not your authentic life, and where Gary teaches you how to live off the grid and live your authentic life. There are people that are struggling coming out of this craziness with drug addiction, with alcohol. And we're here to tell you that Ben Stein got through it. Stephen Gibb got through it. I got through it. Gary Collins has gotten through a lot of other crazy stuff in life, and he's gotten through it. And you're not alone. And no matter how much you might feel like you're alone, I wanted to bring this up because I just know there's a lot of people that are still struggling and scared shitless out there. And they're scared to death to say, "I'm scared and I don't know how to get out of this." And every morning I'm blessed almost to be able to talk to Ben on the phone about how scared we were the night before and how scared we are in that morning. And I beg of you, I beg of everybody, you're not alone. Keep on keeping on. And if you have any issues, you could always just say it in the chat. If you don't feel comfortable, you could say it privately to us. and we're there for you. So remember, bensign.substack.com. Download the podcast. Steven, are you going on the road? Tell people where they could find you.
I'm not going on the road yet. I would love to. It just things haven't really kicked in enough yet. But if you want to find me, you know, I'm on Instagram. You can go to StephenGiveMusic.com. And really just to jump on what you just said, listen, if you're struggling right now, I don't care who you are, ask for help. Even if, you know, you got to email me or email whoever, just ask for help. That's the biggest, most important thing, because it's an inside job, but it's not a solo mission.
Oh, that's okay. Great. Ben, we got to use that. That's great. Another great name for a band.
Very good.
And Gary Collins, where can people find you?
TheSimpleLifeNow.com, and make sure to listen to my podcast, The Simple Life with Gary Collins.
It's really worth it. Listen to both of their podcasts. It's really, really worth it. And of course, you can find Ben at Spectator.org. Donate to Spectator.org. It's really important. They're one of the oldest and most loyal conservative news sites out there. So please go there. And of course, you can find Ben on Parler at Ben Stein and Rumble. You can find Ben on Rumble. He's Rumble on, sing that song. And on that note, Ben, take us out.
I've done this before, but I think the time is right to do it again. We are not afraid. We are not afraid. We are not afraid today. Oh, deep in my heart, I do believe we are not afraid today.
God bless you all. Thank you so much, Stephen Gibbs. Thank you so much, Gary Collins. Thank you, America's teacher, Benjamin Jeremy Stein.
Don't do it up too much and intensify the class struggle.
God bless. Godspeed. We will see everybody Tuesday night. Thank you guys again.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you, Stephen. We'd like to see you a lot, really a lot.
Pleasure.
God bless you.